Hello and welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, as truthful as resources permit. Jazza, how is New York?
Oh, you know, as a local New Yorker, I can really speak to this question. Thank you so much for asking. So New York is actually in the midst of a triple-demic at the moment. Did you know about this?
I did not know about this.
So because not enough America... Why am I laughing? Because not enough Americans got vaccinated, they still have COVID problems. So they're having a surge of COVID cases, of flu cases, and of another respiratory disease called, not CVS, because that is a pharmacy,
That would be ironic, I think.
CSV or something? Like another, like it's a cough.
Is it CSV like a spreadsheet file extension or something?
It is a CSV, so it's almost definitely not CSV. Shit, I don't know what it's called. But it's basically something that gives you a cough. And that I'm in the middle of a triple-demic. Oh, it's just like the good old days in 2020 and 2021. Otherwise, I've been on 8 dates in the last 2 weeks.
Jesus
Not all
Christ.
With the same person, don't worry.
That's good.
It turns out my Hinge game, really good. And I've also... Yeah, that's about it, really. I've eaten more pizza in the last 2 weeks than I have in the past 2 years. So that's also happened.
At the risk of alienating New Yorkers, I don't think their pizza is anything to write home about. I was much more impressed by Chicago's pizza game than New York's.
Are you joking? The Chicago pizza, like the deep pan pizza?
Yeah.
That's a soup.
I think quiche would be a more appropriate analogy.
When have you ever cut into that and it's kept its form? I'm sorry, that is objective. It's not even a pizza. If you were to take... Yeah, I'm going there. If you were to take a deep pan pizza to Italy, I feel like you would be dead within the hour.
Yeah, but I'm not sure Americans' pizza efforts would generally impress Italians anyway.
I think the New York pizza is pretty good. It's not as bad as like a Tesco.
It's not
pizza,
as bad as Tesco.
Yeah, not as bad as Tesco. Anyway, thank you so much for asking, Jimmy. How's the UK as our British correspondent?
Still the same, I think.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Not undergoing a triple pandemic, so I guess that's
no,
good.
No, Jimmy, it's a triple demic.
Yes, very good.
Thank you.
Can I expect more of these clunky portmanteaus, given that you're in America?
100%. Hello, listener, by the way, welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, where we talk about politics, social issues, and current events whenever we want to. This is our end of year episode. Year in review.
Do you know what we're doing here, Jazza? Have you done any preparation?
Yeah, I've done some. We're going to be doing the annual Centrist Dad Awards, which are awards where we go through the stories of the year and try and remember what the fuck happened. We're going to be going through 5 categories. They are as follows. The most banterous story of the year. Anything that didn't make the list on that?
I mean, it's difficult. Some of the listeners will note there's a bit of overlap between some of these categories, and it's sometimes difficult to delineate which should go into banterous story. But I feel pretty confident, actually, in my... I've got 2 choices. I'm gonna see which comes out, you know, see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. You sound so much like a football manager being asked what you're planning on doing in the next match. Like, you're saying so many words but nothing at all. Yeah, I feel like we kicked the ball really well and we're gonna do the thing, and I really believe in the boys. Yeah, it's great.
I don't believe in the boys as a rule. I think I'm very skeptical whether the boys can deliver for us in the next match, so that's why I'm not been appointed as the next England manager.
Thank God. Our second category is the biggest opportunist. I think in the past, Michael Gove has been my go-to here, and he very nearly was my pick this year as well.
What event in particular prompted that?
Oh, of him being in Biggest Opportunist. The his showing on the Laura Koonsberg show, where he basically dismantled Liz Truss as a potential leader, with her sitting about 10 feet away from him.
Yeah, he said something unhelpful at the Tory party conference as well, I seem to recall.
Yeah, he didn't believe in the 45p tax rate cut.
That's a good choice. I hadn't thought of him, but yeah. So I'm excited to find out what your actual pick is this time around.
I think you're going to enjoy it. The next category is the most cancel-worthy. Always very exciting for us to be able to pontificate about something that we will never actually be able to do.
I think we could attempt to cancel some of these people. Do you not think?
Oh, so you've gone for a person. How interesting.
Wait,
How
wait, wait. What, you've
interesting.
Gone for like a phenomenon or a chemical element, perhaps, or.
A state of mind, maybe.
Sure, a vibe, I think.
and then our final two are the most honourable, and then, of course, the most dishonourable. The latter of which there were many, many contenders this year.
See, I thought there were many contenders, but I actually, the one I picked, I think was just so self-evidently the correct choice that it blew all of the others away. But
Awesome.
I found it difficult to disentangle the most honourable and the most dishonourable because for me they came from the same news story ultimately. So
Oh, how
that's a little tease
interesting.
for
Oh
the
my God,
audience
look
there.
at you. Look at you teasing. Speaking of teasing, our patrons are going to get a bonus episode for the end of the year where we're going to be making our predictions for 2023. Only available for patrons. All you have to do is give us a dollar or international equivalent per episode, or more if you like. But yeah,
I feel like
patrons get
we
that.
made predictions last year, and I think at some point when the mic's turned off, I'm gonna go and look up what those predictions were. And then in the Patreon episode, I will probably rinse Jazza for the terribleness of his prediction, and I can celebrate the greatness of my prediction. I don't know what I
You
predicted, but I'm confident it was probably right, so.
of course, such confidence that only a white man could have. So, we're gonna go away. Jimmy's gonna thank the patrons and tell you a little bit more about that, and then we'll come back and do our award ceremony.
Trebon. So we've come to the end of another year on the Right Dishonourable podcast. I think both Jazza and me would be surprised that we're still going over 200 episodes after we began this podcast back in 2015. We'd be even more surprised that so many of you are not only willing to listen, but also happy to pay a few pounds or dollars via our Patreon to access bonus content. Quite a few of you have also got in touch this year with topic suggestions and other nonsense, and that's been great, so keep that coming. If you're interested in joining those guys, head over to patreon.com/rightdishonourable. In the meantime, thanks to all our current patrons: Eterna Elf, Andrew Kilpatrick, David Preston, Gemma Cumming, Jer Carney, Ilona Domkina, John O, Marlene, Matt, Michael Costa, Nick, Seb Kales, Tahar Khan, and Theo. Thank you very much and have a great new year. So, Jazzy, you said on a text message to me that you had some trouble picking out the most banterous story of the year. Why was it so difficult for you?
I think it was, in retrospect, now that I've found it, I found the one that I want to nominate.
Okay.
It was obvious to me. I think because there are so many really terrible consequences to what could be seen as a banterous story. So, Vladimir Putin invading Ukraine. Oh, banterful, but people died. Stuff like Boris Johnson getting kicked out and then us having a prime minister for like 6 weeks. Oh, banter, 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 but also really terrible for everybody involved. My nomination is actually that period, Liz Truss adjacent, but isn't quite Liz Truss. If you know
sort
what
of
I mean.
Pre-Liz Truss, do you mean, or post-Liz Truss, or what are we going for her?
No. It's within the Liz Truss era. Yeah. Who, fun fact, is the first prime minister in like nearly. In like 70 years or like a very, very long time to have served under two monarchs.
Yes, that would make sense.
Despite the fact that she was only in power, she was only in office for 40-ish days or something.
I think
like that
there's two estimates depending on how you count it. It's, I think, 45 or 49 depending on the same.
Oh, I was going to say 44 or 48.
Yeah.
So one of us is wrong, yeah. And is counting from the wrong day. But for me, I have chosen The Lettuce.
Okay.
As the most banterous story. And for anybody who doesn't know, let me give you a little background, which was actually really easy to find out, because the Liz Truss Lettuce is now a Wikipedia page.
I mean, that's got to be some sort of legacy, I think.
100%. So there was an Economist article that likened Liz Truss's the time that Liz Truss had left as Prime Minister. They said that she they said that she had managed to crash the UK economy within 14 days, which is shorter than the shelf life of a lettuce. The deputy editor of the Daily Star, who are not known for their cutting political analysis, let's be fair.
I'm not sure that's true. I think their covers have gained some notoriety, actually, for the banter.
Yes,
certainly for the banter. But within the banter does contain kernels of political analysis, I would argue.
Kernels of political... lovely little kernel. And this was the biggest kernel of all, where the deputy editor read The Economist and then pitched it as an idea, and they set up a live stream of a lettuce alongside a photograph of Liz Truss. As the days counted on, they added things. So there was a Keep Calm and Carry On mug that the lettuce was supposedly drinking from. There were googly eyes and feet put on the lettuce just to anthropomorphize it a little bit more, to the point where eventually the iceberg lettuce, which was bought from Tesco and was only 60p, I have bought the very same lettuce many a time. The lettuce won. The lettuce outlasted Liz Truss and was able to, according to The Atlantic, even though there were discolorations on the lettuce, it would have still made a perfectly good salad. And so that was like the deliberately most banterful story that I have put in for 2022.
I think it's a strong nomination, to be fair. And I think you've...
Thank you.
In my opinion, you've slightly cheated by your own criteria, because you said there that we can't pick stories where there are severe negative consequences. And I feel you've somewhat picked the Liz Truss premiership without quite picking it. You found out...
Exactly.
You found a loophole in your own rules.
I have, 100%. You're welcome.
Yes, was it very, behaviour very redolent of the last government under Boris Johnson. Last but one. Not Liz Truss's government, I guess.
The last but two, right?
We can argue about numbers.
Depends how we count.
Yeah, it depends how we count. Yeah, just like Liz Truss's premiership, it depends how we count.
Yeah, it depends where we start and how we count, sure.
So I did think about putting in the Conservative Party leadership crisis as one long story, but I would tend to agree with you that the negative consequences of that have probably been too severe to make it purely banterous. Although you've picked a banterous example to actually highlight everything else that was going on, which I think is well played. So instead, I'm going to pick, I'm going to nominate Elon Musk's chaotic purchase of Twitter.
Okay.
Which was initially mooted by Elon Musk, who, I mean, I enjoy a bit of Twitter, clearly not as much as him. But he gradually raised the idea of doing this. And he started gradually buying up shares until he had a significant shareholding, all while basically, tweeting snubs and subtweeting the Twitter leadership team and Twitter in general, and kind of saying how shit and poorly managed it was, which in and of itself already very funny. The pinnacle of the story from my point of view is that Elon Musk agreed a deal to buy Twitter and then tried to back out of it, and then Twitter threatened to sue him, and he was eventually forced to purchase it. So that whole arc of the transaction for me is just perfect. I mean, currently we are now living, oh, you're not actually, having been kicked off Twitter for posing as
Although
Elon Musk.
I do occasionally pop in, because I can still use Twitter
Yeah.
logged in as me, but I can't do anything with it. For anybody who doesn't know, I was banned from Twitter for impersonating Elon Musk.
Yes.
So I'm still kind of like hanging it around every now and again, and it really wants me to change my name to something other than Elon Musk. But I, as I have said in multiple pla on multiple platforms, I refuse to bend the knee.
So, since buying Twitter, Elon Musk has instigated a number of policy changes, one of which is to ban parody accounts, including mostly parody accounts of him, it seems to be. And his most recent action, as we go to audio recording, is he held a Twitter poll to decide whether he should step down
Oh,
as
fuck's
CEO of
sake.
Twitter, and the vote for yes, which I voted. I backed the winning side in
Oh,
this.
did
The
you vote in it? You did.
yeah.
You always back the fucking winning side.
When it comes to referendums on important issues, I always back the winning side.
Yeah, on
And
simplistic yes, no,
simplistic yes, no,
determination. Sure,
up down
sure.
decisions, I pick the winning side. And so seemingly he's going to step down, although how much leeway his success is actually going to be given when a new CEO is found for Twitter, unclear. Probably not very much, I would guess. But I just think it's a great thing all around. And I think the negative consequences, of which there have been some, I mean, there have been a lot of bruised egos in Silicon Valley, and it's a bit questionable that he has said he would allow Donald Trump back onto the platform in order
Well,
to
he's
tweet.
allowed. He's been unbanned,
Right,
but
but
Donald
he's
Trump isn't
not actually come
tweeting. He's on
back.
Truth Social.
No, yeah, Donald Trump has his own social media network to promote now. But I think this is a largely victimless story. Apart from Elon Musk, who, made himself the victim. So I think this is a strong nomination for most banter story of 2022.
Oh, interesting. I think that is a strong nomination. Well done. I have this story in another category, and have a slightly less, oh, there's no victims here thing, probably because I'm one of the victims.
You sort of brought it on yourself, though, didn't you? It was clear that he was banning
100%, I knew
parody
what I was
accounts,
doing.
and you did this deliberately. I don't think anyone should feel sorry for you in this saga.
Yeah, this really was just a way of me having a more healthy relationship with social media, to be honest. I needed an excuse not to open up Twitter every 10 minutes. But just it's a later nomination for me.
Is that your pitch for not accepting this as the winning entry for most banter
Correct.
story?
Yeah. And I also think mine is just better because I've ducked, dove, wove around this in a very creative way, I believe. We really should have like a third party invigilator
I mean, probably
who
we should
decides.
throw it open to our patrons to vote on which story they prefer. That would be user engagement right there.
Sure,
But
we'll do that.
let's stick with
But
this
provisionally,
obviously flawed format of us voting on our own nominations.
I think provisionally I win.
I'm happy to actually to pick the lettuce in this instance, partly because the Conservative Party leadership crisis was what I was originally going to go for before I heard your pitch, and you've basically got that in despite cheating your own rules, which I respect while also disapproving of.
Thank you so
So I
much.
think this is a bit of a Pyrrhic victory for you, but you can have it.
Great. Thank you. You're so
No
generous.
problem.
Moving on to our next category, the biggest opportunist. How
Should I
did
go
you
first on
interpret
this?
this? Yeah, you go first. How did you interpret this? What was your thinking? And who have you got?
Well, I think an opportunist is somebody who eyes the game of politics, I guess, is mostly what we're talking about here, and decides to make a move that is going to benefit them in a significant way. That was broadly how I interpreted this. Somebody who's managed to jump into a situation that nobody could have predicted happening, I think. Or just someone who's generally taken advantage of a situation, if you want to broaden it out, in a
Is it
significant
Rishi
way.
Sunak?
It's not Rishi Sunak, actually.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, go.
I'll wait until you've actually said your one before I tell you what some of my other considerations and kind of runners up for this category were. But
Okay, okay.
the one I'm going to pick is actually Boris Johnson, I'm afraid. I know you were hoping that he wouldn't
Oh.
come back into this, but
Well, actually, well, because if I look at all of my nominations, it is almost as if Boris Johnson was never Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. He was our leader for the whole of the first half of the year, and has featured in none. So much happened in the latter half of the year that he just hasn't featured in anything whatsoever.
Well, I was
And
preparing.
is not one of the most chaotic things to have happened to the United Kingdom, I think.
That's. I mean, that's. I think that last point is debatable. I mean, I looked back on our episodes for the first half of this year, and most of them do feature. Or maybe most is exaggerating. A lot of them feature us discussing when Boris Johnson is going to be kicked out.
To leave, yeah, sure.
Certainly some of the earlier ones, and then I think in some ways things had quietened down before the Chris Pincher scandal actually, facilitated Boris Johnson's exit. But for the Biggest Opportunist Award, the incident I'm specifically referring to is his attempted comeback after Liz Truss was ousted. So
Sure,
he was
okay.
on holiday, I want to say in the Caribbean somewhere,
Yes.
while he should have been in Westminster because
Working.
Parliament was sitting, and yeah, he should have been working. I'd imagine it, I think there was some briefings going around that he'd actually trashed Rishi Sunak deliberately through various back channels, or his allies had done so in order to try and get Liz Truss put into office. So I don't know if this was an example of 4D chess. I very much doubt it, but I think most people would not have expected Liz Truss to be ousted so soon after she was made Prime Minister. And considering that Boris Johnson was kicked out because the rest of his party hates him and consider him incompetent and a liar and generally a ne'er-do-well, it was entirely outrageous, if entirely keeping in character behaviour, for him to try and become Prime Minister, less than 60 days after he'd actually been booted out of office by his fellow MPs and the Tory party. And he did make a good go of it. I mean, I don't know if you saw this way after Rishi Sunak was put back into office. There was an interview with Graham Brady, the chair of the 1922 backbench committee who controls the leadership elections for the Tory party, where he suggested that Boris Johnson actually did have enough nominations to go to a vote, basically, and he could have actually decided to do that. I guess my inference from that is that he felt that even though he could have actually been voted back in as leader of the Tory party and become Prime Minister again, he's so hated among fellow MPs that it wouldn't have really been a goer. But I think just the fact that I mean, Boris Johnson is a famous
The fact that
opportunist
he
anyway.
clearly
Yeah, he
tried.
tried and failed, by his own lights. But so far, there's not been a suggestion that he's going to stand down in the next general election. There have been a number of Tory MPs,
Oh,
sitting
he
Tory
is
MPs.
going to he's going to stand.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure he can pull out whenever the fuck he wants, but they've been encouraging potential candidates to confirm whether they want to continue, but we've seen people like Sajid Javid isn't going to stand
Yeah.
again, who is one of the people who helped bring down Boris Johnson. There's no guarantee that Boris Johnson is going to be able to keep his seat, especially with the way that polls are going at the moment,
Yeah, so he's in
either.
Uxbridge and West Ruislip, I think, is his constituency. And I think that was a reasonably secure seat when he got it. He used to be MP for Henley, which is Michael Heseltine's odd seat, among other people. I think you're right. I think it's a reasonable possibility that if he stood in the next general election, he would lose his seat. I think Labour's the next biggest party. Yeah, I think Boris Johnson, you could probably pick any year from the last 10 years, and Boris Johnson would be a good pick for Biggest Opportunist
Biggest
Award. So
opportunist,
it's a slight
yeah.
cliched choice, but I think the, even by his standards, trying to become Prime Minister again so soon after being booted out of office was outlandish. So he's my pick.
I like your pick, but I will point out that he wasn't successful in his opportunism.
I guess that is a weakness in my nomination.
Mm-hmm, it is. I just wanted to point that out because I do want to win. My biggest opportunist is the comedian Joe Lycett.
Okay.
So Joe Lycett is a very good comedian. I think Joe Lycett is hilarious. Does a lot of fantastic stuff on Twitter. And came to the political fore this year. On one of the first shows of Laura Kunzberg New
I
Sunday
think it was
Morning
the first
Politics
show.
Was it the first show? Yeah. Mm. And he was sat there on a panel of pundits who are generally taken more seriously. And Joe Lycett was an absolute fucking riot to watch. Lots of people disliked it and were like, why have you invited a comedian onto a serious political talk show? And a serious political talk show where the future Prime Minister, either Rishi Sunak or Liz Truss, were present. When Liz Truss had finished her interview and Laura Kunzberg went on the line and asked each of the contributors to say, what did you think of that? Joe Lycett said, well, actually, I'm incredibly white right-wing, so I loved it in the best sarcasm. And also, at the end of Liz Truss's interview, like, clapped and whooped from the sidelines. And I've heard, so the Politico podcast, which is hosted by Elva Ray, did a really good interview with him where he clarified that he was basically bringing into real world interactions a lot of these comedic things that he does on Twitter, interacting with politicians like Nadine Dorries. He'd be like, don't listen to them, babe, you're gorgeous just as you are and I think you're brilliant, keep going girl, and all of those kind of things. And he basically did that but on a serious Sunday Morning Politics thing. The specific thing that I'm going to put Joe Lycett in here for and nominate him for is for what he did around the World Cup. So he criticised David Beckham. I forgot who David Beckham was for a hot second there, but don't worry, everybody, my brain is working again. Criticised David Beckham for taking lots of money, 10 million of American dollars, for being like the spokesperson in the face of the Qatari World Cup. I'm not really sure what David Beckham did as the face of the Qatari World Cup, other than just making money. We did. It was literally last week.
Okay.
We talked about the last episode we talked about this.
So David Beckham, I think the main thing he's done, at least the most ostensible thing he's done, is sort of brand ambassador, I suppose, for Qatar.
Yeah, but what does that mean?
Like, well, what are
he's been in a couple of TV spots,
I guess. like promo clips. Like there's one on YouTube about Qatar as a stopover destination.
Great. Giving vibes of Kylie Minogue on the Eurostar.
Yeah, I suppose quite similar to that. I didn't, that reference has escaped me. It must be a Gen X thing, I guess. But
there's really no need to be rude, Jimmy Nichols, is there? We're all civil here. there was this big kind of like curated advertising campaign, essentially, that ultimately is going to be there in order for Joe Lycett to sell tickets for his tour, where he said, donate all of your money that you've gotten from Qatar to LGBTQ+ charities, or I'm going to shred £10,000. And then the David Beckham camp said nothing. I think it was very telling. David Beckham has been dethroned as a gay icon because he did the gayest thing possible and married a Spice Girl. And so that was successful, but it then transpired that Joe Lycett shredded fake money.
Yes.
Had never intended to shred real money, and in an interview later said that it was a way of being able to promote his tour. So although I do really enjoy Joe Lycett's stuff, and I enjoy the consequences of his stuff, of showing the ridiculousness of the political punditry on Sunday Morning Television, and the injustice, the inappropriateness of David Beckham taking so much money in order to promote an unsavory regime in Qatar. I think that he was the biggest opportunist of the year. And may I add, was successful in his opportunism because he did sell lots of tickets for his tour.
So this is interesting because one of my other nominations for this award was David Beckham for the Qatari deal.
But just taking the money.
Yeah.
sure, sure.
So there's various reports about how much this deal was worth. Like the figure that you often see is £150 million paid over 10 years. But there's a more modest figure that The Athletic quotes, which is a sports website. They say it was 12 million a year for the initial 3 years, so that's 36 million guaranteed, and there's options to extend.
It's nice to have options to extend, isn't it?
Yeah, especially with that sort of money. I'm sort of wishing I picked David Beckham because we could have gone David Beckham versus Joe Lycett for this award. And I think David Beckham is a better pick, really, because he has made a... He's going to make much more than Joe Lycett out of this particular kerfuffle.
But may I remind you, that wasn't who you chose. Sorry, I don't make the rules.
I'm getting a glimpse of Jazza as a jobbing lawyer in the Better Call Saul vein, I think.
100%.
Just strictly adhering to the rules and arguing any loophole he can. I still think Boris Johnson's a better pick, I've got to be honest. Notwithstanding that he failed, I don't think failure actually undercuts somebody being an opportunist. I think you can be an opportunist even if you fall flat on your face. And I think Boris Johnson is a bigger opportunist in this instance.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you're wrong.
So we're going to have to declare a tie on this, aren't we?
So we can declare me the winner there, and then
You did this last year. I knew you would do this again.
Yeah, and we can if the patrons want to overturn it, maybe we can do a Twitter poll or something. Like that'll be fun. Moving on to the moving next on category.
Swiftly after that summary judgment.
Swiftly moving on. I have spoken. The most. Okay. Cancel worthy. So I kind of wanted to put the year 2022 in this category.
You want to cancel the entire year.
And to nominate the whole thing. Yeah, I kind of... There was too much that happened. And it was quite exhausting as well. Even though we only have a sporadic upload schedule, it still felt like an awful lot, and it was very, very exhausting being a follower of British politics this year. However,
life is so hard, so difficult.
Thank you so much for empathising. but I have gone for a... I teased that it wasn't an individual. I've put a section of the British establishment in here is my nomination.
Okay, which section?
So I've specifically put, for ease here, I want to cancel the Institute of Economic Affairs, but also but also by extension all libertarian think tanks. That,
you could just say Tom Harwood, Jazza. You could just say Tom Harwood, it's okay.
All libertarian think tanks that exist around Westminster, so places like the Adam Smith Institute, the Centre for Policy Studies, and the Initiative for Free Trade. I'd like to just put all of them in the bin. I want to put them all in the bin. I think they're terrible, but also they're most council worthy because they finally actually got what they wanted and got in the people that they have been... I'm going to use the word grooming. The people that they have been grooming for the top jobs for a very long time, when Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng ended up as Prime Minister and Chancellor, and then decided to destroy the UK economy by implementing all of the policies that that organisations and that think tanks like the Institute of Economic Affairs have been promoting for such a long time. I'm also cancelling them because of their ridiculous lack of transparency. They don't declare who gives them money. But there have been investigative journalists who have, and campaigners who have gone out and found that they are linked to the oil industry, the gambling industry, and the tobacco industry, which obviously are the three pillars of a prosperous nation.
I'll tell that to the Scottish independence movement.
Oh, sick burn.
That was a sick burn. On the transparency point, I appreciate I'm fighting a long losing battle here, but and I should declare something of a conflict of interest. I've written and been paid for words by The Critic, which is based on Tufton Street, which is that famous street where
Which is the
all
street.
these nefarious think tanks. But that's not why I'm about to argue what I'm about to argue. Firstly,
Sure.
ad hominem attacks, where you basically say your argument is wrong because you're a dodgy geezer and I don't like you, which is essentially, the thrust of the transparency argument, is logically bad. We shouldn't be endorsing it, Jazza. We should be endorsing rigorous thinking, which, means not dismissing somebody's argument just because of who they are. Secondly, as you pointed out, we know who funds these groups, so whether they declare it
Yeah,
or
it's
not, it is fairly irrelevant. Even if those journalists and campaigners hadn't found out details of who was funding these groups, it's pretty obvious which companies would benefit from the kind of arguments that the Adam Smith Institute and the Institute for Economic Affairs make. If you're a pro deregulation think tank, it's obvious which industries stand to benefit from that. I'd also say in the
I would broadly agree. I'd
In
broadly
the case
agree.
of the tobacco industry, they have been profoundly unsuccessful in their lobbying of the British government, who are largely in the process of making smoking illegal in this country, inch by inch rather than quickly.
Puff by puff, if you will.
Very good. So, I mean, all that said, that's just an aside. I think effectively the libertarian think tanks managed to cancel themselves, didn't they? Through
That is,
the imploding Prime Minister.
no, there's still advisors in the Rishi Sunak, I was about to say White House, I guess it's because I'm American now,
Very good, yeah.
in the Rishi Sunak Downing Street operation that are from and have links with these institutions. They haven't been cancelled, which is why I think it's about time we got them out and cancelled them.
Okay, yeah. Put a pin in that for the moment.
Let's stick a pin in that and let's circle back.
So,
What's your nomination? If you put me, I'll be very annoyed.
I don't think you said anything cancelable, Jazza, which is not something I can claim for myself
Well,
throughout the
there's still about half an episode left, Jimmy. Just you
That's
wait.
true. That's true. So, I'm gonna pick Will Smith slapping Chris Rock.
Oh,
And I
good story.
so to be fair to so just to allow the story, I'm sure everyone who's listening to this remembers it, but effectively at was it the Oscars,
It was the Oscars,
Chris
yeah.
Rock made a joke about Will Smith's wife Jada Pinkett Smith and her follicle problems, should we say. And for that, Will Smith got up from basically the front row of the auditorium and walked up and slapped Chris Rock in the face. And later on in that same ceremony, went up and accepted an award. And the whole thing was deeply bizarre. In most, I think it's fair to say in most other contexts, if you slap somebody in the face at a work do, which is basically what the Oscars is.
You then don't get rewarded
Yeah, you not
afterwards.
only do you not get rewarded, you tend to get escorted from the building pretty quickly, and you lose your job. And I think it's fair to say Will Smith has suffered some professional consequences for what he said. I think he eventually chose to step down from the Academy, didn't he? And so I guess that means he won't be participating in the awards next year. You can tell I'm talking slightly off my brief here. I think I'm not entirely au fait with the movie industry and how it works.
But you're our entertainment correspondent, Jimmy.
Surely that's you, given that you're in America now, where all the films
Of
come
course,
from.
sorry. Yeah, all the films
All of...
and the one with a movie podcast as
Yes,
well.
also, God, I should have gone for that first. But I think it's appropriate to cancel an actor for physically assaulting a comedian, because I think it's just a great metaphor for how cancellation should actually work. Chris Rock, You could say it was an unpleasant joke because it made fun of somebody who actually suffers a medical condition that causes her to lose her hair. And it, in that sense, wasn't in great taste. It was in the spirit of the Oscars, where comedians generally rinse high-profile actors who are, it's fair to say, some of the most high-status people in the world, some of the most privileged people in the world. But I think just generally, we should just cancel people more for physically attacking people for saying things they disagree with, because so often it's the other way around. It's people trying to threaten people for saying things they don't like and trying to ruin them financially as well. So that's
What
my
do you think?
nomination.
What would a cancellation of Will Smith in this scenario look like for you?
I mean, this category is always difficult for me because I somewhat don't believe in cancellations in the
I
sense
was
of.
saying, but you sounded rabid at the possibility of as rabid as Jimmy Nichols could ever get. You sounded quite keen at the idea of him being cancelled for slapping Chris Rock.
I mean, I think probably if you go around assaulting people, not insulting is fine in some context, but if you go around assaulting people in your industry is kind of justified in meaning you can't work there for a while. I mean, how long it should be, I don't know. This is always kind of the argument, isn't it? There probably does need to be a way back if you slap one of your colleagues at some point, and there needs to be some sort of.
If I slapped you, how long would I have to be in the timeout bin?
I mean, someone would say it would depend on how much I deserved the slap, I guess, and how hard the slap
You
was.
definitely deserved the slap.
Okay.
And it would bring up a red flush. And it would hurt, but there'd be no like I'm not going to knock out a tooth.
It's mostly my pride that's been wounded rather than
Yeah, not
myself
very little,
physically.
no permanent damage, no
Yeah.
permanent damage.
Okay. I think maybe 2 or 3 weeks, which is the normal time period
Yeah,
between
that's so
podcasts. No,
there'd
I
be
think that
no
works for
break.
me.
Sure.
Yeah.
Excellent. Good.
That wasn't the most convincing end to a nomination, I don't think, but yeah,
You
that's what I'm
know
putting out
what?
there.
So I want mine to win.
I think your relentless competitiveness is getting in the way of this format somewhat, but
Never.
I'm just gonna note that. I'm just gonna put it out there as the podcast goes on.
However, I'm willing to cede this one and say that maybe yours is a little bit better, just so that the stakes are okay, you know?
You're like a TV producer on a reality show
100%. It
who's
needs to be down to the wire.
skewing the game slightly. Pr
Yes,
presumably this means
definitely.
you have to give me the next one, otherwise you're gonna, be free up if you win the next one, and the last category will feel a bit pointless, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shit.
So let's hope that your next one isn't very good.
Yeah, I just need. I need this to be. I need you. Yeah, you need to pull it. It needs to be like the Argentina France game, where you pull up behind, and then I kind of like get it at the last minute again
Okay, so
with a penalty shootout.
you need to give me a couple of easy penalty kicks just to
Of course,
slot
yeah.
away.
Do you feel like the political equivalent of Mbappe, though? I think that is the question. No, is the
No,
answer.
no. No, I mean that he's already more successful than me.
Yeah.
It's one of the dangers of getting older, I think, is sports people are already, younger than you, already have achieved their goals and dreams, and you're.
I have never screamed at a football match, "Go on, my son," but I think that that is the point where you're like, "Oh, I've aged." Moving on to the next category.
I think you just, I mean, you're almost, I guess you are, you could have fathered a professional football player just about, right? If you'd slept with a woman a bit older than you as you were a teenager. Maybe not even older. You could have just about done it. Moving on.
Moving swiftly on to the next category. My God.
Thinking about the maths, the age logistics
No,
going on here.
stop that. Now it is the, and I'm not old enough for that to have been the case, by the way. It would have had to have been underaged.
It would have been, yeah, poor behaviour on your part in this hypothetical scenario.
Oh my God. The most honourable.
I think I'm due to go first on this one.
Yes, go.
So there's a slight risk. I did tease in the intro that I may run into my most dishonorable nomination as well with this. You'll see immediately where I'll go with this. But I feel like Volodymyr Zelensky is going to be a difficult nomination for you to beat, actually. So I think you can probably throw anything at this. And
Is that who you're gonna, you're just gonna save Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of
I think
Ukraine, and then
yeah,
be like, mic drop.
I think we can save a lot of time here. Our listeners are busy people. You know, we don't need me to run through the arguments and then you to put up your crap alternative, and then we can just declare me the winner if you want.
Okay, so let me sure. Let me play devil's advocate just a little bit here. Do you not think there is a case for him to have been nominated in the most op biggest opportunist category rather than most honourable?
Because in the wake of the invasion, he's carved out this image of himself as a hero. Well, you could argue that in some ways he
And has
was.
secured a lot of money for Ukraine
Yeah.
for he just came off of the back of a state visit to the United States, the
Yes,
first time
yeah, I
he's
saw
left the
that.
country since the invasion, and in order to essentially lobby for not quite infinite money, but infinite money.
Lots of money. Yeah, and I mean there's lots of if you read the bits of the press that are more critical of the West's involvement in the Ukraine war, there's definitely a case that in some ways he was underprepared. He definitely has links to politicians and sort of non-politicians who are nonetheless political actors who are less than salubrious, should we say.
He started as a comedian with a TV show about a guy who ended up becoming the president of Ukraine, and then, as a comedian, became the president of Ukraine in real life. And in the TV show, apparently, I don't speak Ukrainian, so I haven't actually seen it. In the TV show, the comedian who becomes president ends up doing a lot of like corruption and stuff like that. And apparently, before the invasion, Zelensky has been accused of those kinds of things as well. Although I will say, broadly, from the Ukrainian people I know, and from the reporting from Ukrainians who used to be very critical of him, they've been very complimentary of the way that he has dealt with the invasion.
Well, I think the if there's one event that encapsulates why he's a good pick for most honourable, it's that at a certain point the US, I think it was the US, offered him basically a way out of Kiev during the early stage of the invasion, and he said he broadcast a clip of himself online saying something to the effect of "I don't need a ride, I need ammunition or I need weapons," or you know, and that's eventually what he got. And I think most people would, if he'd decided to cut and run, you know, at the risk of being captured by Russian soldiers and killed or tortured or something else, I think most people would have said, yeah, fair enough. I think most people would have run in those circumstances. And he didn't. So yeah, I'm sure that a lot of the criticism leveled against him have some substance to it. He's certainly no saint, but I think in the context of you know, the whole year, I think he's a shoo-in for this category. So what's your pick,
I am gonna lose, but actually that just means the narrative of this whole thing is going really well.
Yeah.
I am nominating Nicola Sturgeon
Okay.
on two fronts. One, you know what you're getting with Nicola Sturgeon. She wants an independent Scotland. And you know what? She tried her bloody hardest to make that happen. It went all the way up to the highest court in the land, who turned around and went, nah. And you know what she did? She respected the decision.
Well, not
She.
really. I
literally said, I respect the decision, but will continue to find ways of being able to validate the cause that she has dedicated her
Like
political
you,
life
she
to.
engages in loyally behavior and convenient arguments to pursue her cause. She immediately said, "We're going to go back on the sidelines of our SNP annual conference, and we're going to figure out a way to get a referendum or some sort of binding vote, despite what the Supreme Court has said.
But didn't do the kind of thing that, oh God, remember Boris Johnson and proroguing Parliament? Like, didn't try and go outside of the norms and the processes that exist in the country in order to kind of like create social cohesion. And I think that is like actually really positive leadership and honorable leadership. She is playing within the rules. I'm also, this wouldn't be an end of year.
Even the court case itself, I will let you finish, but even the court case itself, everyone, I mean, most people thought she was going to lose, and it was a completely spurious argument anyway. It was, in effect, it was an attempt to break certainly the spirit, and actually, as it turns out, the letter of the devolution agreement. I mean, it's perfectly obvious that to actually break up the UK, which is what she's trying to doing to do.
But she went through the correct processes.
I mean, also every time there's an election now, she says this is a referendum on, sorry, this is a vote on whether Scotland should leave the UK, or it's a vote for a referendum.
And the Scottish people keep giving majorities to independence-backing parties.
But generally speaking, if you look at the polling, I mean, there was a period where there was a majority for independence, but it's largely neck and neck, and, you know, I think if you take the last 6 months, I think no has been, as in we want to remain in the UK, has mostly been ahead. I think that's fair to say. So she's not honourable. I mean, she's a Nigel Farage figure.
And I'm not done. Thank you. She's not a Nigel Farage figure.
Literally everything you said in the introduction about her doggedness and about her transparency, actually, in terms of it's clear what she's for, it's clear what she's against. All of those things could have applied to Nigel Farage.
Speaking of transparency, this wouldn't be an end of year episode.
Jazza, why are you doing this to us? Why are you doing this to us?
Without there being a controversial trans topic that's come up.
Let the record show that Jazza raised this, and I discouraged him from it.
Yeah, it's fair. But I think that Nicola, obviously we clash on this sometimes, but I think that Nicola Sturgeon really showed herself to be an ally of trans people specifically. And I think it would be really easy in this day and age to not advocate for a very vulnerable group of people who don't have very much representation and for whom a lot of the mainstream is not on board with their protection, and she has supported the rights of trans people through her support of the bill that has just been passed through Parliament for it to be made easier for trans folks in Scotland to be able to change their gender.
Change their gender legally so that...
Yes, correct. Specifically, the moment I'm thinking of is when there were a load of protests led by Joanne Rowling from Harry Potter fame.
Are we not calling her J.K. Rowling now?
She's Joanne.
She's just Joanne.
Just Joanne. Where she defended her decision to support this bill and highlighted the fact that abusive men, as she said, this is a quote, abusive men are the risk to women, not trans women. And most men who want to be abusive to women don't feel that they have to change their gender to do it, citing the concerns that people have about this bill. I appreciate that. And I know that the rest of the UK is not, and there are a few politicians south of the border who are willing to kind of like take this kind of a stand to support trans people. And I think that it is very honourable that she has.
I think specifically in reference to this category nomination, she has been clear about what she thinks about this issue. And there are lots of politicians, particularly senior figures in the Labour Party, who have vacillated and given mixed signals. There was also Penny Mordaunt during the Tory leadership race who went back and forth on this.
Introduced us to the term biological woman, which no one had used up until that point. She like found a new loophole to be able to talk about cis women without using the word cis women. It was quite clever.
Yeah, so Okay, well, it's a valiant effort to defend Nicola Sturgeon. You've obviously lost, so should we
I
move on
have
to
lost, yes. Shall we move on?
should we move on to most dishonorable then?
Yes, and so you may have noticed, dear listener, that I said that Elon Musk was in my nominations. And my most dishonorable for this year is Elon Musk. Around the Twitter stuff, but specifically because he's a fucking incompetent hypocrite.
Oh.
So I think he is dishonorable because he claimed at the beginning of the year, when he started buying all of those shares, that he was a free speech absolutist, that he believed in the community of Twitter being able to take decisions and putting it to that wider community. What has happened is basically proven that we should never have big CEOs as leaders of countries, because he has repeatedly moved the goalposts for himself, banned people for their speech. Hello, I'm right here.
You've not taken this well.
And no, well, you know what? Actually, my life is much better now because now I spend all of my time on Hinge rather than Twitter,
So
which is
really,
why
you
I've
should be
had all of
thanking
those
him.
dates.
Yeah, Elon Musk should be the most honourable category for finally getting Jazza on some dates.
Yeah. And I think, and the reason that he is most dishonourable for me is because, despite the fact that I do appreciate my time away from Twitter, I don't think anything is going to be able to replace it. There has been much talk of people going to other networks like Mastodon, for example. But I don't think it can work in the same way as Twitter does, as the public square of at least the chattering, politically engaged class. Like, that is what Twitter is for a small sliver of the population, but a very influential part of the population. And if that crashes and burns, I think that we miss out on stuff, because Twitter is not just a way for Elon Musk to be able to send abusive tweets to people and to remove their access to the social media site itself, etc., etc., or for him to be able to inflate the price of Dogecoin. But it's also been a tool that has been used by activists across the world in order to be able to organize. The Arab Spring 10 years ago, a lot of it was chalked up to activists' access to Twitter. It is a fantastic resource to be able to find information. And I really worry that Elon and his policies are going to take that resource away.
So I think I'm quite bullish on the prospects for Twitter surviving. I think it probably will. I think, as mentioned in my first nomination, there's a lot of stuff that Elon Musk has done with Twitter in terms of changing policies that has not ended up well. He is a hypocrite on some things. I mean, he clearly took action against, I mean, I think it was only earlier this week or last week that he banned a bunch of journalists from Twitter because they'd written unflattering things about him, which, when you're a free speech advocate, is hypocrisy. It undermines the cause of free speech, which, has plenty of problems anyway without, leading figures doing things like that. So I do agree with you on that. The decision to actually kind of play around with the verification status, so the fact that you had to be
You can
verified by
get a gold
Twitter.
tick now.
Yeah, there's now this like growing bunch of ticks that you can pay for. What is the gold one anyway? What do you get that for?
I don't really paying $8 a month.
Oh, I thought
I
that was the
don't
blue
really
one. I
know.
mean, you know, a lot of people have made jokes about this, but there was definitely a use in Twitter having accounts that you're like, oh, that is the official account of the US State Department, or that is the official account of the UK Prime Minister, or so on, so on, so on. You do need that on a social network like Twitter, and his tenure has been massively chaotic. Some of it has been very enjoyable, to be honest with you.
And he's now going to leave,
Well,
apparently.
he's going to step down as CEO, but how
Yes, sure.
uninvolved he is after that, I think, is questionable. I think at the end of the day, he's a boy who's bought an expensive toy, and he's still enjoying playing with it. So I think he'll continue to do so. But
People want him to lead our colonization of Mars. Can you imagine?
I mean, traditionally, merchants did lead colonizations of far-flung lands, so often I with bad it. Consequences.
I hate it.
But it would be in keeping with the general course of human history.
I'm not
history,
sure we should be pulling from the East India Company and its the way that it functioned in South Asia for a very long time as inspiration for how we go to the next frontier. Anyway, Jimmy, how about you?
I feel I'm slightly cheating with my nomination here because I think it is such a humdinger. I think you're going to struggle to argue against it.
Mm-hmm.
Vladimir Putin, see previous topic.
I appreciate your theming of your nominations. I would argue... Go on, why? I wonder.
Well, Vladimir
Give us
Putin,
some exposition.
For those who are not familiar with his work, decided to invade Ukraine earlier this year. Hence the nomination for Zelensky as the most honourable person in the Centrist Dad Awards. aside from just being an awful thing to invade a neighbouring country and has inflicted untold death and destruction and casualties in Ukraine, Russia have not even made a good job of this as a war either. It would have been better in some ways if they'd done it effectively and not not to have descended into this brutal this war is easily going to run longer than a year now because it starts in February and it's going to keep going, and in turn causing chaos in energy markets. The fact that we're actually everyone here in Britain is trying to limit their energy usage because the prices are going up, that is partly due to Vladimir Putin. It's difficult to think of a single individual who has done more damage to life this year than him, I think it's fair to say. Again, I think this is an open shut case, Jazza. I think it's... I mean, Elon Musk, yeah, sure, he booted you off Twitter. That is bad. But, did he boot you out of the energy market with ridiculous prices? I don't think he did.
Fuck. Yeah, I've got no fuck. I think there's one line that you said that was like, nobody else has damaged humanity with.
Yeah, that is a challenge. I think there could be.
I think there are probably others.
This year solely, I'm talking about not throughout the course of human history, obviously, but.
Genghis Khan.
I mean, I guess, Xi Jinping is possible for some of the things that the Communist Party are doing
me,
in China.
Excuse me, who?
Xi?
Thank you.
Xi Jinping.
Xi Jinping.
Sorry.
You don't even have to put on an accent for Xi Jinping.
I've been watching too much BBC coverage, so I've forgotten how to pronounce his name.
Lucky I couldn't make that slapping a real thing.
I think Putin is the winner here.
So I think that we should put this to a poll.
Vladimir Putin versus Elon Musk.
Yeah, who is the most dishonourable? Can we tweet this out now?
We could tweet out now. I don't know if we've got the engagement, particularly because one of our co-hosts decided to get himself banned from Twitter.
That's a very good point. We're going to tweet this out from @rightdishonourable. We're going to let you decide who was the most dishonorable person of the year, Elon Musk or Vladimir Putin. Fun, doesn't it?
Would it kill you just to take the L and just admit that
no.
I won this year's Centrist Dad Awards?
No, I don't. No, I'm not okay with that. I don't think so. And it gives our listeners an opportunity to follow the podcast on Twitter as well.
It does. It does.
Amazing.
Any honourable or dishonourable mentions for any of the categories, ideas that came up that you eventually decided not to include?
Well, you did more work than me, so no. Do you want to...
I'll throw a few out there. I thought Matt Hancock for his recent turn in I'm a Celebrity.
That
would have
is a good shout for most dishonourable.
Pitch.
Yeah.
No, biggest opportunist, not most dishonourable.
Oh, biggest opportunist.
I mean, Matt Hancock.
Yeah, to be fair, untold death.
I mean,
or eating spiders.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's trying to turn out a media career for himself off the back of a very dubious tenure as health secretary during the pandemic.
And you know what? Good for him. I hope it works.
In most cancel-worthy, I thought I might nominate Gianni Infantino for the opening speech at the Qatar World Cup, where he identified with these marginalised groups and said, "I'm not making this up." He said that I identify with you because I was bullied as a kid because I was ginger and had freckles, which is similar to being put to death because you're gay. It's, those things are basically equivalent.
Brilliant.
And in most honourable, I'm glad I didn't nominate this because I think you would have beaten me. But I actually kind of admired in the end, not at the time, but thinking back on it, Neil Young's attempt to cancel Joe Rogan over Joe Rogan featuring various conspiracy theorists and COVID deniers and assorted cranks and idiots. Because a lot of people, when they try and cancel someone, they don't put any skin in the game. They don't risk anything themselves. They just say, "I want this other guy gone. I want him to his career end. I want you to stop supporting him financially." Neil Young said, "You know, you can have me or him to Spotify," and actually put something on the line. And I think you have to respect that, actually.
Okay.
It's a much better pitch than most
That would
cancellation
have that would
attempts.
have been that would have been a very good nomination.
It wouldn't have won me the game, though, would it?
No, it wouldn't.
I lulled you into a false sense of security with the first two topics, and you just got blown away in the second half.
Yeah, you did. Thank you so much for listening, listeners. If you are a patron, you will hear our predictions for 2023. Otherwise, we will see you in the new year. Have a great Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever the hell you're celebrating, and a lovely new year.
Au revoir.
Au revoir.